Right now, we are continuing our look at Mark chapter 7. Mark chapter 7. So, if you will, we are looking at that particular chapter. If you will, let's turn there, and we'll read a section of there in just a second. We have just talked about in Mark chapter 7, the first half of that chapter, essentially, the first half of that chapter, we see that that Mark is talking about Jesus and the traditions of men that we see, and talking about in particular the washing of hands. And of course, we should wash our hands for hygienic reasons, but they were washing their hands for religious reasons. They were under the assumption that whenever they go to the market, they could be exposed to things that are unclean, in particular with regard to the Gentiles, because the Gentiles aren't going to keep the cleanliness laws that we find in the book of Leviticus. So they wash their hands, they wash all sorts of other utensils and things with regard to the markets and eating and such. And Jesus says, no, what is unclean comes from within, it doesn't come from without. And so he's offering this paradigm shift with regard to how the Jews at this time viewed the Gentiles and viewed the cleanliness laws and things of that nature. And so to underscore that, he goes to Tyre and Sidon, which we talked about last week. And he heals a woman who was a Greek-speaking woman who was a Syrophoenician, which is a Gentile, very clearly a Gentile. Matthew says she was a Canaanite, which is a descendant of the people that were to be cast out of the land, were told to be cast out of the land all the way back in Deuteronomy, where they're told that. So that is, and of course Joshua, where that was to be accomplished. Of course, it wasn't completely, and so people like this Syrophoenician woman exists still, and was healed, or at least her daughter was healed. And then we note that he goes on from there to the Decapolis, which we talked about earlier in Mark chapter 5. The Decapolis is a region that is a Gentile region. So let's go ahead and read this section here. That's chapter 7, verses 31 through 37, and we will read that and then consider some things there. All right. Let us read. Again, departing from the region of Tyre and Sidon, he came through the midst of the region of Decapolis to the Sea of Galilee. Then they brought to him one who was deaf and had an impediment in his speech, and they begged him to put his hand on him. And he took him aside from the multitude, and put his fingers in his ears, and spat and touched his tongue. And he spat and touched his tongue. Then, looking up at heaven, he sighed and said to them, Ephphatha, that is, be open. Immediately his ears were opened, and the impediment of his tongue was loosed, and he spoke plainly. Then he commanded them that they should tell no one, but the more he commanded them, the more widely they proclaimed it. And they were astonished beyond measure, saying, He has done all things well. He makes both the deaf to hear and the mute to speak. So, that is a wonderful consideration that we see here in Mark chapter 7. First, let us consider the location that is under. Well, first off, this is one of the miracles of Jesus. We note that there are 18 specific miracles of Jesus. We note that there are some places where other people are healed, and there are plenty of places where it just says he healed all these people. But these aren't specific cases, and so we're looking at the specific ones because Mark looks at these specific ones. And it's important to understand that so that we know that well, it's important to understand some of these things that were given the details they were given here by Mark, because they each teach something about Jesus. He could, Jesus, they chose these specific accounts for a reason. And so that's why we're looking at these, in particular. So that is, one thing to note is that you have, in parentheses next to this particular one, the 13th miracle, there's a dash there, which is an indication that this is a miracle that is unique to Mark. And we see that there's only one other that is unique to Mark, and that's the 15th one, the healing of a particular blind man. And so we will look at that more in detail in a few moments. But that's just something to consider at this time. A lot of these miracles we see recorded by Matthew as well. Most of them are recorded by Matthew and Luke. There is one, only one, that's only recorded in the only other place is in Luke, and there's only one that we see that is recorded in Matthew and John and not Luke, and that's walking on the water and the feeding of the 5,000, which is covered up right now because of my face, is recorded in all four gospel accounts. And so that must be an important miracle, and it certainly was, as we'll find out when we get into chapter 8. So we looked at that Syrophoenician woman last week. So we read about this deaf man who was healed just now. And now let us consider this location that they are in. This location, recall, this is the same region that Jesus healed the man who was possessed by Legion, Decapolis in Mark chapter 5. And Jesus cast these demons out into a herd of swine. And we note that this is another Gentile region. This is another Gentile region, making it even more clear Jesus' intentions toward the Gentiles. The Lord, we understand, and this emphasizes this, is not just the God of the Jews, but the one true God of all. He moves from Tyre and Sidon to the east side of the Sea of Galilee once again. Matthew says specifically that he skirted the Sea of Galilee. He goes around the Sea of Galilee. So looking at this, we note earlier at the end of chapter 6, he was in Gennesaret. And Gennesaret is in this region. Let's see if I can do that here. Is in this region right around here. And he had gone up to this area of Tyre and Sidon. And we note that in some manuscripts earlier in verse 24, it just says Tyre. And then in verse 31, it says Tyre and Sidon. So it's probable that he encountered the Syrophoenician woman here in this area around Tyre. And they had Jesus had gone up around a little bit further up around Sidon. And now he is going back. And we see he's going back. This is the approximate route that he took. This is the road that we see in ancient, records. At least a close approximation. I didn't follow the road exactly, but a close approximation of where the road was from Tyre, going around Caesarea Philippi and going down toward Decapolis. And it says he goes around the Sea of Galilee, of course, around this area here. Of course, Decapolis borders the Sea of Galilee, and we'll talk a good deal more about that when we consider the first part of Mark chapter 8. Perhaps today, but you know how things go, probably not. We see here that in Matthew chapter 15, verse 29, it says that he skirted Galilee. Recall that his fame had spread there before. In Mark chapter 3, verses 7 and 8, it doesn't say Decapolis specifically, but it says the regions beyond the Jordan. And so that could mean any of those areas. It could mean Perea, it could mean Decapolis, it could mean Trachonitis in that area, which is to the east of the Sea of Galilee, but north of Decapolis. It could be that area, or it could be only one of those. But we know that some of those areas very likely Decapolis was among them, that his fame had spread in that area. And especially this happened after a legion was cast out, and he encouraged the former demoniac to spread the news. We see that in Mark chapter 5, verses 19 and 20. He tells them, spread the news, tell this to everybody. And so that likely spread his fame to that in that particular region. All right, let us consider the fact that this, as I mentioned before, is a miracle that is unique to Mark. It is not mentioned in any other account. Again, this is one of two miracles that is completely unique to Mark. The other one is, I mentioned the blind man, the 15th miracle is in the next chapter, Mark 8, chapter 8, verses 22 through 26. And we note that this specific occasion, this is the only recording that we have of a specific instance where Jesus heals a deaf man. Now, there are mentions of it elsewhere, but only mentions. We see in Matthew chapter 11, verse 5, that he heals the deaf. We see the same thing in Luke chapter 7 and verse 22. But again, this is the only specific occasion where we see that the deaf, a deaf person is healed. Now we do see in Mark chapter 9, there is a possibility of a particular person who was deaf being healed, but that's accompanied by a demon possession. So that's the more important consideration there. And so we'll look at that one when we get there. So Mark is showing how much of a servant. So in all of these instances, we know that that Mark is showing just how much of a servant Jesus is here. And he's helping all of these people. We note, and I mentioned this when we looked at Mark chapter 6, where he walked on the water and he there was this happened all night. There's no indication that he nor his disciples slept. Now it's possible that they slept on the sea at some point, but it seems like it's a difficult thing to see happening. So he's working, nonstop, constantly healing people and teaching people. And he rarely finds rest. We see one instance where he does on the boat in Mark chapter 4, where there's this huge storm and his disciples wake him up. Now, of course, it's a dangerous storm, and so they're fearing for their lives, but even so, he's rarely finding an opportunity to rest. He's going from one place to another, to another, to another. And that's the idea that we see here in Mark, that he is that suffering servant. And the attitude of service that we see is very evident, we'll see when we get to Mark chapter 10, to the sort of the central thematic verse for the book. All right. So that being the case, we note that this man, he has a particular problem that that comes to Jesus, this particular man. And we see that he was a deaf man. And of course, being deaf means that you cannot hear. You cannot hear. And one thing we might notice about those who are deaf or hearing impaired is that their speeches and their some I've talked to about it, they're rather sensitive about it, but we've got to speak matter-of-factly, is that their speech is just a little off. And it's something that can't be helped. We learn how to speak by hearing other people around us. And if we can't hear other people, then our speech becomes more difficult, and learning how to speak becomes more difficult. We note that this indeed could be the man's problem. We see that he had an impediment to his speech. In verse 32, had an impediment in his speech. This could be the man's problem, but he could also have had a stammer. Literally, this statement is that he was speaking with difficulty. He spoke with and it was very difficult. And if you've ever seen anyone with a stammer, it's very evident that it's difficult for them to speak. And so that could possibly be the case too. We note that it's possible he was mute entirely, and that could be the impediment that he experienced. the text seems to suggest that it's merely a stammer, but we note that in verse 37 it says he makes both the deaf to hear and the mute to speak. So some might consider that this was that they were that Jesus was had healed a mute man here. While this is true, he did heal those who are mute. This may have been a slight exaggeration on the case of those who were speaking here. So this was the man's problem that he had. He was both deaf and had this speech impediment. Well, then we note that Jesus, in fact, he heals this individual. Jesus heals him. Now, the people there, we note that that they brought this deaf man to Jesus, begging him to put his hand on him and heal him. So, I have a couple questions, trying to figure out some questions, some answers to some of these things. One of those questions that I have here is, and if you have a comment about this, I put it in the description so we could think about this ahead of time. Jesus takes this particular man aside. Now, there are different possibilities as to why he did this, but what are your thoughts? Why do you think he may have taken this man aside at this time? He could have easily healed this individual without a second thought. He could have healed him without looking, without thinking about it. But indeed, he has taken him aside, and he does this. So why do you suppose that's the case? Sam, you got something?
Yeah, so I mean, we have lots of cases, and this is a great study of the miracles in the middle of the book of Mark. But when you look at it, there are cases like the daughter of the Syrophoenician woman we just covered, where she was healed at a distance. We have that in a couple of other cases, right? So we have, there's no limitation to whether Jesus is there with him or not, and there's no real limitation of distance. So then you have to ask yourself the question: so why didn't he just heal everybody? Bang, everyone in Judea, right? Palestine and everything else. Why did he just heal them all at once? The point was is that he is doing this, one, not just to heal people. And that's real clear from the scripture that, these things were done to help us believe and to help establish that he was the Messiah of Israel. And so when he does this, he's doing it for a specific reason. He didn't have to do it that way. And I'm sure you're going to cover in a minute. He didn't have to touch the guy's ears. He didn't have to touch his tongue. He didn't have to spit. All those things Jesus did for a specific reason. And some of that we don't understand. We just don't know why he took him aside, if that's what he wanted for that man, for what he was doing, if he wanted to separate him from some of the crowd that was there. We just don't know.
Yeah, and to be fair, some of my questions are discussion questions. They're based in speculation or what we might think is the most likely reason. And part of that is because it helps us to think about these things and to think critically and to help us get into their mindset. So if this is the case, then we could have a we understand why he does certain things. And so I have a couple possibilities. Perhaps the reason is to perform the miracle in a more secluded area. He does tell them later not to tell anyone about this. And that may be the reason. He didn't want to publicize this too much. But also think about this deaf man. This deaf man, it doesn't say anything about the circumstances behind his deafness. He could have been deaf from birth or from a very early age. Whatever the case, he hadn't heard anything in a long time. And perhaps, as Sam M mentioned last week, these are not quiet places, very likely. These are places that are very, that are probably, there's a lot of people there, which is an indication that there's probably a lot of noise, a lot of people talking, a lot of movement and things of that nature. Perhaps it was to avoid some sensory overload this man might have experienced with a sudden, sudden ability to hear where he wasn't able to hear before. It's like, say you've been on a diet or you've been fasting for a long time or whatnot, and you have that first bite of food after a while, and you get all those sensations, and things are just so wonderful, and that's only for a little while. Imagine someone. I'm sure you may have seen the picture or the videos that we've seen that we've that people have shared on social media about kids and people who are given cochlear implants and things of that nature, and they're able to hear for the first time ever. And especially the little babies, man, it's so adorable that the moment that they hear their mother's voice or their parents' voice, and they perk up and they're like, "What is that?" And so that kind of attitude or that kind of thing, of course he's going to hear things, whatever the case, but it's probably best to be in a more secluded area, an area that's not quite so loud. And so maybe that's one of the reasons why he was taken aside. Now, we know, as Sam mentioned and reminded us earlier, that Jesus can heal from afar or with the touch of his clothing. We saw healing afar in fact, just the last miracle that we saw with the Syrophoenician woman and her daughter. We saw a woman with an issue of blood, a flow of blood for many years in chapter 5. All she did was touch the hem of his garment, touch the edge of his clothes. And we can see that many people were healed that way as well. And so, yet here he decides to do something seemingly very peculiar to heal this man. There's no, I don't recall any other indication. Now he does touch people in correlation to healing them. The leper we saw in Mark chapter 1. But this is the only time I can think of where he now there's another very interesting one later on. Actually, the other one that's unique to Mark in Mark chapter 8, that's very that we'll definitely get to that one because that one is very interesting. But here he puts his fingers in the man's ear. I mean, that's very peculiar. Puts the fingers in the man's ears. Now it doesn't say, so I wonder if he just touched them and then let go, or if he touched them, spit, touched his tongue, or maybe he mingled his spit with the tongue somehow. I don't know how that happened exactly. It just says he put his fingers in his ears, he spit, and he touched the man's tongue. So that is unusual, especially for a Jewish man, when spitting, at least in some circumstances, could be considered unclean. That kind of uncleanness that could be associated with that. So this is a very unusual thing for Jesus to do. And again, this won't be the last time he does something unusual when he heals somebody. So to talk about that particular aspect of this, the question then, did Jesus have to heal in this fashion? Did he have to heal in this fashion that he did here with this particular deaf man? Any thoughts on that? Any thoughts on that?
Well, obviously he didn't because he's healed other people, right, in other ways. And there's no limitation to somebody who can tell the wind and the waves to stop, right? He's not like, well, let's see, if I can't spit, I guess I just can't, take care of this guy. But again, you raise an interesting point. mentioned that he would do that, the first thing that struck me was the idea of like uncleanness or you know, spitting in. The scripture talks about spitting in someone's face is a terrible insult, right? So you had this kind of thing that would be to someone. But the other part that came to me was, you know, like a mother and a baby, right? If the mother's trying to comfort the baby or trying to help the baby, that she's, you know, touching him and holding him, and it's a precious thing. And that, you know, Jesus loves these people. It isn't just this clinical act of getting rid of a medical problem, right? He loves these people. He's going to die for this man. And so, you know, and of course, I don't know if you've ever been around deaf people. My late wife was an interpreter for the deaf, and I worked with deaf people in college. They're very intensely visual. And so if he's like a normal deaf person that I've ever known would have been staring at Jesus' face penetratingly this whole time, watching every move he made because he couldn't hear him. You know, Jesus reaching out and touching this guy's ears, tender act. You know, that what he was doing was caring for him like a child that he loved. And anyway, that was my speculation.
That's some really good points, Sam. I hadn't considered that particular aspect. You know, I have been around some, not clearly not as much as your wife and you have, but you and you're right. You know, I can imagine if I were deaf and I couldn't hear, I would be looking around a lot, trying to make sure that you know, because we don't realize how much we rely on our ears to warn us of danger or of any little thing. We don't realize how much unless it's taken away from us. And so that's a remarkable, that's some good insight there. Thank you. But we understand, of course, that he didn't have to heal in this way. Of course he didn't have to. As we noted, he was able to heal from afar in the very previous miracle. So he must have done this for some kind of reason. And Sam answered the next question I had. Why do you suppose he did? Because this individual was deaf and was intensely visual and relied on other senses, such as sight and touch. And so, of course, touch was a big part of that as well. And so maybe this wasn't to heal the individual, or at least this wasn't to let everyone know that this is what happened, but to let the deaf man know that, hey, I am going to heal you right now. This is me doing this so that you know that you can listen to me when you can hear again, or when you can start hearing, that you can pay attention, and that I am someone who is who ought to be listened to, who has that kind of authority. So that's a really good point, Sam. Thank you. And I do have mentioned on here on my notes that Jesus, perhaps he wanted to make it clear who was healing him. Of course, in my estimation, it was to let everyone know. But Sam makes a good point that it could just be to let this deaf man know. This is further shown by looking up to heaven and sighing. Then we note that saliva, the funny thing is, saliva, at least in terms of spitting, was sometimes considered an insult or sometimes considered to be unclean. But for some Gentiles, saliva was thought to have healing properties among some of them. And so perhaps he also wanted to help them make that particular connection. He also spoke Aramaic to this particular Gentile, Ephatha, and perhaps reinforcing that while he is healing a Gentile, he is still Jewish. Now, that's a funny thing because the deaf man can't hear him just yet, but the other people around him can. And so sort of emphasizing the fact that he is Jewish, but he is still healing and serving the Gentiles. On the other hand, it is possible that this is the first word that the deaf man heard. And it was as if Jesus was hinting that this man needed to look toward the Jews for salvation. After all, there is no mention that his faith made him well, as at other times. There's no indication of that here. Now, it's likely that it happened, but on the other hand, it was other people who brought him to Jesus. He might not have known anything about Jesus because I don't know how they communicated back then. It's unlikely. Well, they might have had some form of sign language, but I don't know exactly what they used, if anything. Probably not anything as specific and translatable as ALS or ASL, as American Sign Language. Whatever the case, his ears were opened and he could speak plainly. And again, this is something that happened immediately. This is something we note from all of these miracles, that it wasn't just something that happened slowly or gradually, or something that it was something immediate. All the charlatans that you see healing deaf people, when they ask them if they're healed, they speak very loudly, so that if they're even slightly hearing abled, then they could hear the man. Say, yeah, I can hear you. Wow. Well, that's because he's speaking really loud. That's not because he's actually been healed. And so what we see here is that this is that it doesn't say how loud Jesus spoke to him, but I can't imagine it was very loud, especially if this man has just received his hearing. He's got to have soft tones and for a little while anyway, until he gets used to things that are a little louder. All right. I don't know, Sam, do you know anything about how they might have, since your wife worked with the deaf and whatnot, do you know anything about the way they might have communicated back then, sort of the history of this?
Well, you know, the more sophisticated sign languages are fairly recent, only about 100 years old, because they would actually spell out letters, like English Sign Language literally makes the shape of the letters with the two hands. But fingerspelling and ASL are really very recent inventions. But if you go to primitive tribes where someone's deaf, I mean, basically you can use a lot of hand signals. It's not like a written language or something that you can translate directly, but you'll get the gist of what's going on. So you can say that I'm hungry or I'm hurting or something like that without having to spell a word or make a particular symbol. But yeah, whatever was going on, I think the other interesting point you made there was the person's faith isn't mentioned, but it says they brought him. So somebody brought him, had faith that Jesus could heal him. And that's an interesting comparison, for instance, to the ones who brought the lame man and lowered him through the roof. Same situation. Doesn't say anything about the faith of the one that was healed. It was the faith of those who brought it.
Right. Right. And that's very possible too. It doesn't say specifically, it's possible that they had some measure of faith, but we don't know. We just don't know. Now let's consider the reaction that the people here had. Let's see. Jesus had taken this deaf man aside, recall, and perhaps only those who brought him were with them. And Jesus, he now addresses them and he urges them that they tell no one of this, as he's mentioned, as he's done similar things before. And in Mark chapter 1, verses 44 and 45, when he heals the leper, he didn't want people to know about that. And the leper didn't listen, proclaiming that. And these people, they didn't listen. They proclaimed this miracle. They proclaimed what had happened here. And so that is, they were not listening to Jesus. And it's one of those things that's really difficult to keep quiet. I mean, after all, this man was just, he was deaf. I'm sure people knew about it. And yet he is now able to hear. How are you able to hear? Well, let me tell you about this man, Jesus. So it's going to be really hard to keep that quiet. And again, for how long? How long are they supposed to keep that quiet? I mean, so So you see that it's difficult for them to do that, and it surely they didn't do that. And this is, but the issue that I see here is that this is contrary to what Jesus told the former demoniac in Mark chapter 5. So he tells that particular individual, go and tell everybody, tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell everybody about this. But here he says, don't tell anyone. So my question is, why the change? This is the same area. It's understandable. We've talked about the reason why this shouldn't be spread among the Jews, because he had enemies and people were out to get him, and so maybe he didn't want so many people to know about that just yet so quickly. But then why in the Decapolis? Why this change? Any thoughts on that?
At the verse in Mark chapter 5, he says, go home and tell your friends. And so it's not like the Great Commission, right? Go to the whole world and tell everybody. But he was saying, basically, don't keep it a secret, go home and tell your friends. But granted, the demoniac was separate from his house, right? He was living in the cave. So he going back home to his family and his friends would have been hopefully the thing he wanted to do, and to tell them what had happened to them. But yeah, it's interesting the purposes of why Jesus says to someone, don't tell them, or just go and show the priest. It's like he does with some of the others. He says, okay, go show the priest and offer the cleansing, offer the sacrifice for the cleansing, as evidence that you've been cleansed. But there's not this one thing that is never done, and really until the Great Commission, is stand up on Jesus is on the rooftops going, everybody come to me, look, I'm going to heal a bunch of people, wow, all right, great. There's nothing like that. There's this notion of humility, and he's not there to raise a crowd, and he's not there to become famous. He's there to save the world, and he's got a cross ahead of him, and he knows it.
Really, really great point, Sam. Yeah, a measure of humility. He is not there for the glory. He is not there for the recognition. He's there to help people. He's that suffering servant. He's there to serve others and to help them and not to serve himself. So that's a really good point, Sam. Thank you. Some other comments that I have on here that perhaps he just didn't want his fame to spread too fast, too soon. As we talked about earlier, he had enemies. And so he didn't want his them to he's not quite ready to go yet. He still has some things left to do. And his fame could hasten his crucifixion before he was ready. He still had, again, much more teaching and much more healing that he had left to do. Or it would serve to prevent him from finding any rest. I mean, we know that he has been desperate for a respite, desperate for a respite. But finding none, we saw in verse 24, he entered a house and wanted no one to know it, but he could not be hidden. He wanted a chance to rest, but if his fame had spread, he would have fewer chances to do that. And so there's that possibility as well. Whatever the case, they proclaim it further. Because they were astonished. They were astonished at what had happened. One commentator says that their minds were blown, that they were blown away by what had happened here. Because and the Gentiles may not have heard or seen anything that had something like this before. So what they proclaim is that he has done all things well. Don't we have a song like that? I remember thinking about that but I didn't look it up, but I think he has done all things well. And isn't that a wonderful statement to say about Jesus, that he's done all things well? They also echo Isaiah's prophecy that we see concerning Jesus in Isaiah chapter 35, verses 5 and 6. And I do have that on the mention here, Isaiah 35, 5 and 6. We had a devotional about that a few weeks ago, that he indeed did heal the deaf. In fact, let's read that as we close out that particular passage. And we'll read that in just a second, as soon as I turn there. It says, then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, and the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. Then the lame shall leap like deer, and the tongue of the dumb sing. For waters shall burst forth in the wilderness, and streams in the desert. The parched ground shall become a pool, and the thirsty at land springs of water. In the habitation of jackals, where each lay, there shall be grass with reeds and rushes. So we note that they are repeating essentially what we see in Isaiah 35. That this is an amazing thing that Gentiles are doing this. Next week we will look, Lord willing, we'll look at the feeding of the 4,000. And again, there's indication that this particular miracle takes place in the Gentile regions. And so the feeding of the 5,000 takes place in not far from Capernaum and in the region of Galilee. And then we see the feeding of the four among the Jewish region and in the Gentile region, very likely near around Decapolis, the feeding of the 4,000. And so we'll look at that next week as we look at Mark chapter 8. Thank you for joining us. I see a couple other people are here. I see Rebecca, Letha, and Vance Blanton. Great to see you all on here. We'll end this live stream in just a moment, and we will resume a new one for the worship service. So if you want to continue, stay tuned on this page, and we will be back very shortly. Again, thank you for joining us, and we'll see you soon.